Thank you very much, Randy. And in Ag News here for your New Year's Eve, reports surfaced early Monday that the Chinese vice premier will lead a delegation to Washington to sign the Phase One trade deal. A source close to the situation tells the South China Morning Post, that Liu will fly to Washington on Saturday to sign the agreement. The source said the U.S. extended the invitation and Liu has accepted. Farm Futures reports that Beijing and Washington have not confirmed the trip. China is already buying larger amounts of U.S. agricultural products, including soybeans, which was a big part of the agreement for U.S. President Trump. The possibility of making the deal official this weekend will mean increased purchases by China, as well as a partial end of the trade war that's dominated the headlines for the past year and a half. China's soybean imports from the U.S. recently hit a 20-month high at 2.6 million tons, the highest number since March of 2018, when the trade war between the world's largest economies began to pick up steam. Reports of higher food prices in China will likely mean a need for increased imports of U.S. ag products in the months ahead to bring those prices down. The United States has seen a lot of benefits from the Philippines' growing demand for imported ag products as well. The USDA's Foreign Ag Service says agricultural exports to the Philippines will reach a record level of $3 billion by the end of this year as shipments continue to arrive. The U.S. currently commands 28% of the market share in the nation and is making the largest supplier of agricultural products. Last year, the Philippines was the 11th largest market for U.S. ag exports. The top five products included soybean meal, wheat, dairy products, pork and pork products, as well as poultry. Last year, ag exports to the Southeast Asian nation reached a record of $2.9 billion. U.S. soybean meal was the highest valued export with $884 million worth in 2018. USDA data shows that while sales were down 4% from January to October year over year, Manila officials still expect a record of $3 billion as shipments picked up ahead of the holidays. U.S. food and beverage products alone will reach a record $1.2 billion by the end of this year, which amounts to more than 29,000 container trucks. Moving on to news from the USDA, the Department of Agriculture released a clarification on its requirements for accuracy in labeling of meat and poultry products. An AgriPulse report says the Food Safety and Inspection Service says the only way beef can get labeled grass-fed is if they are fed on grass or forage 100% of the time after they were weaned, because cattle would then have to access the pasture till slaughter, they can't ever be put into a feedlot. Products that come from animals with less than 100% access to grass or forage before slaughter cannot use the term grass-fed. The only way that that can happen is if the label makes it clear that at least some of the animal's dietary needs came from grain. As an example, the report says an acceptable label could be made from cows that are 85% grass and 15% corn. The guidance that came out late last week also says certified organic products can be labeled legally as raised without antibiotics or no added hormones with no documentation required. The farm that produced the organic livestock or poultry as well as the processor have to be certified organic under USDA standards. In other news from the USDA, the USDA's Economic Research Service looked into the ways that climate change could affect the cost of the federal crop insurance program. Researchers work with statistical models to predict crop yields from historical weather data. They use the weather simulations from climate models to build scenarios showing how yields might respond to climate change. Economic models then simulated how farmers and markets might respond to changes in weather and yield. The study explored the potential impacts in the year 2080. It compared climate scenarios arising from different projections of greenhouse gas emissions levels to a hypothetical figure with a climate similar to that of past several decades. Under that scenario, with moderate emissions reductions, in which farmers adapt to changes in climate with adjustments to what they plant, where they plant it, and how they manage it, and the cost of today's federal crop insurance program would average about 3.5% higher than under a future with a climate similar to that of the recent past. Under the scenario in which emissions trends continue, the cost of the federal crop insurance program would increase by an average of 22%. Moving along now into regional Midwestern ag news, the beginning of the 2020 growing season, Missouri farmers will be able to grow industrial hemp as well as Illinois. According to the St. Louis Public Radio, producers will first need to obtain a permit for the Missouri Department of Agriculture. A spokesperson from the Department of Ag in Missouri says producers should wait to have their registration in hand so they comply within the legal limits. Online applications are now available in Missouri and will begin to be processed starting on Thursday. Moving along now into state ag news. In a story from the Noon Farm Show yesterday, Jill Johnson with the Illinois Beef Association was the guest at the latest meeting of the Mid-Illinois livestock producers at 4C Winery in Coffeen. In our conversation, Jill and I talk about the efforts of the IBA that when it's involved when it comes to alternative proteins, as well as the Beef Quality Assurance Program, and what the Illinois Beef Association is looking forward to in 2020.
You joined the group here to discuss the topics in the beef industry at the current time and even in the livestock industry, most notably the difference between plant-based beef and real beef, and that's a big topic going on right now.
Absolutely. So pleased to be here at the meeting this evening, and plant-based protein and then real beef is definitely sort of the issue of the year and something that we talk about quite often. So I shared with the group this evening what we're doing, both on the policy side. That's where the Illinois Beef Association can be a little bit more harder hitting on those issues there, and then also what we're doing to promote beef on the checkoff side of things.
And one question that was brought up that I thought was a very good question was that there's really no set rules yet. It's kind of all in limbo, and the same thing is that they're not really requiring plant-based beef to be on the same sort of regulations as beef. And that's a big issue with the livestock producers here in Mid-Illinois.
Absolutely. So we've got several different alternative proteins that we talk about. There's the plant-based burgers, which have been around for a long time, but what we're seeing happening is sort of a different marketing strategy. And so it's, you know, the great thing about this country is with a safe food system, you have a lot of options. But what we want to make sure that people are aware of is beef, you know, beef tastes great. Beef is still the king of protein. And then helping people understand just those ingredients that go into these plant-based burgers that certainly do not constitute them to be called beef. And then just the nutritional profile of real beef, the zinc, the iron, the protein, and how important it is as part of a well-balanced diet. And then we look at another alternative protein, which is the lab-grown protein products. Something that IBA and we're working on definitely on a national level is making sure that those products are regulated correctly, especially in terms of marketing claims and labeling, and have the proper oversight when we talk about food safety. So beef as a product is inspected every day, and if another new alternative protein product is going to come onto the market that people are going to consume, we want to make sure that it's safe and inspected just as judiciously.
And when we move on to, of course, we spoke a little bit about African swine fever, of course, the livestock producers. That's something that beef has not really been dealing with as any big epidemic around the world. But what is the Illinois livestock, or at least Illinois beef, doing to kind of combat any possible issues that could arise in the beef industry?
Right. So we see African swine fever as such a threat to the pork industry, but still very much a threat to both beef and pork is foot and mouth disease. And so one of our policy priorities was making sure a fully funded foot and mouth disease vaccine bank was part of the 2018 Farm Bill, and it is. So now what we're working on is making sure that we're able to implement that. And more than anything, helping our farmers understand if and more concerning when there is a foreign animal disease outbreak, what steps you need to take to be prepared, especially when we talk about the movement of cattle and if there were a disease outbreak, indemnity payment. So it's important. In that event, you have to have a premise ID for that. So just helping understand if this hits us, what we need to do to be prepared.
And one more topic that I'd like to touch on here. We also, the group talked about BQA and how important that is. So I'm sure a lot of producers out there know what it is, but for those that might need a reminder, you know, let's talk about that.
Absolutely. So the Beef Quality Assurance Program for the beef industry is a voluntary program, a producer-led program, and it really started as a way to improve the quality of beef, and has, you know, in the last 20 years really evolved into our most important sort of consumer confidence tool. So very much about animal health and welfare and care. We cover some biosecurity in the program. So a full gamut of conversation in terms of proper animal handling and beef production practices. But more importantly, we're seeing it as something that consumers are starting to recognize and say, you know, I want to make sure that my beef is raised in a way that I trust. And Beef Quality Assurance certified producers are answering that call.
And moving into 2020 for the Illinois Beef Association, any goals or just anything we haven't spoke about that you'd like to mention for the new year?
Yeah, you know, big picture, we're going to continue to promote beef to the best of our ability, and we're really fortunate in Illinois to have quite a few local cattlemen's groups that help us promote beef too. So we're definitely going to talk to dietitians, to influencer groups, continue to promote beef's great taste, to continue to promote what a protein-packed product it is, and talk about our farmers that work so hard to raise a quality product every day. On the policy side, we'll go into the spring legislative session in 2020, focused on making sure that farmers can still use antibiotics and work with their veterinarian to develop a herd health plan that works for farmers as individuals, and make sure that farmers can continue to expand their livestock farms or bring back the next generation to continue that family legacy.
And again, that was Jill Johnson with the Illinois Beef Association. Moving on into other state ag news and into the weather, it certainly wasn't a white Christmas, at least in most of Illinois, and the days that followed felt more like late April than late December. The National Weather Service has been telling us for a few months now, the start of this winter is going to be mild, but expect it to get cold and wet fast come January and beyond. When asked if we're seeing a shift in the seasons, meteorologist Chris Miller says this is simply a cyclical pattern we can see, but...
You know, I'll tell you, when it comes to the cold and snow that we had last year and that we're anticipating for this coming winter, this is one of these cyclical pattern type things that we see at times. Often they fit into about roughly, you can't really put your finger on it too closely, but it's about a 10 to 15 year period where we'll see these things come and go. We are seeing, though, recently we've seen the changes where our transition seasons, so when I'm talking about transition, I mean fall, and then when we come out of winter and go into spring, we seem to be having less time in the fall conditions, less time in the spring conditions, and we're seeing more of the extremes where we've got the extreme cold during the winter months, and then we're shifting into the suddenly, oh my gosh, it's April, and now we're, you know, or late March even, and we're well into the 80s. The transition months, we have seen a shift in that.
According to Miller, data is showing a shift in the cold and snow to later in the winter and also activity in regards to severe weather. He says these changes are pretty consistent in the last 10 to 20 years.
And a few years ago, the state climatologist was talking about how our winters have seemed to have shifted a little bit too, not really putting a finger on the cause of that, but it's just looking at the data. We've seen where a lot of times when we get the really cold and the snow that had occurred back in the 1960s and 70s, and a lot of that was occurring in December and January, now we're seeing a shift a little bit later in the winter. And his research showed that it was more a little bit later in January and especially during February. February was becoming one of the more active months for winter weather. We've also seen a shift in our severe weather season. You know, we've always said April, May, and June, that's the peak, especially April and May. And we've seen other times of the year where we've seen the severe storms and the tornadoes occurring, primarily, again, shifting more into the June time frame, a little bit later in the season, and also pretty active severe weather in the fall months. We did have a couple of tornadoes this past September. So, yeah, we've seen these changes, and they've been pretty consistent over the last 10, 20 years.
And several areas in Illinois reported record highs on Christmas Day. Moving on now into local ag news on the Ag Community Bulletin Board, the Montgomery County Farm Bureau Young Leaders will be holding their January meeting at 7 p.m. on Thursday, January 9th at the Farm Bureau office in Hillsboro. Also, the 79th annual meeting of the Montgomery County Soil and Water Conservation District will be taking place on Tuesday evening, January 14th at 6 p.m. at the U of I Extension office in Hillsboro. A light meal will be provided by Milanus Catering. The presentation for the evening will concern the recently opened CRP sign-up and also some of Pheasants Forever's habitat initiatives. To RSVP for the meeting, you can call the office in Hillsboro at 532-3361, extension 3. The U of I Extension will also be offering the state-mandated Certified Food Protection Managers class and exam. The two-day course will be held from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Montgomery County Extension Office in Hillsboro on January 30th and 31st. Participants are required to attend both days of class, and the exam will take place on the second day. It is also important to bring a photo ID. They'd like you to register by Thursday, January 16th. The pre-registration is required because exams need to be ordered prior to the course. You can register by calling the Montgomery County Extension Office at 532-3941 or online at extension.illinois.edu/CJMM. And also, the Carlinville FFA alumni will be holding their biannual dinner auction on Saturday, January 18th at the Carlinville Elks Lodge. Doors open at 5:30, dinner served at 6:30 with a silent auction held 5:30 to 8, and a live auction will be held at 8. Dinner will consist of a ribeye or a chicken breast dinner catered by the Carlinville Elks, and there will also be a cash bar. Tickets are available for adults for $20, children 12 and younger or $15, excuse me. Tickets are available at CNB Bank and Trust in Carlinville, PJ's Tire in Carlinville, or any FFA alumni member. The proceeds from this event will go to support the youth in the Carlinville FFA who are celebrating 90 years in 2020. And that'll wrap up this Tuesday morning edition of the Farm Show. But remember, if you have ag news for us or anything for the Community Bulletin Board, that can be emailed to us at WSMI at WSMIradio.com. So for this Tuesday morning, December 31st, New Year's Eve, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News. I'm getting ahead of myself, Randy.
That's all right. You probably won't be the only one. Thanks, Gabe.
Thank you.